Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. I'm the Rosetta Stone of healthcare. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. Yes, this framework works. I am the CEO of my health. 6 months into asserting myself as the boss of my company, my health, I'm learning to be better CEO, feels more hopeful, respectful, energizing, challenging, entrepreneurial, and connected. I'm accountable to my company. My company, Health Hats, has purpose, vision, and mission, and craves leadership and management. My past focus on patient engagement and patient-centeredness fell flat, underwhelming, co-opted, paternalistic, disempowering. Well, if something doesn't work, adjust. Let's explore CEO of my health some more. I'm the CEO of a company, Health Hats, committed to best health, mine and my community's. My company has a C-suite, executive leadership, a board of directors, and subcontractors and coaches. Well, today, I'm much of my own C-suite, CFO, Chief Financial Officer, COO, Chief Operating Officer, and CIO, Chief Information Officer. My board of directors includes me as chairperson, my wife, and my grown children. My primary care doc is my CMO, Chief Medical Officer. My company has no employees. Rather, it engages subcontractors. Doctors, therapists, coaches, pharmacies, diagnostic services, community service are all subcontractors. They're independent of my company, but we hire them and have expectations of them. We could have service agreements with them. As CEO of my company, I lead, manage, decide, and learn. As a leader, I track business and quality outcomes, personal health goals, build a leadership team, the C-suite, and consider ROI, return on investment. I ensure an infrastructure exists to optimize operations. That means that everyone on my team, including me, has the tools she or he needs to do their job, and support self-care for the whole team, including me. Of course, I fundraise and cheerlead, and I manage succession planning. Who will lead and manage when I can't? How will I replace members of my C-suite and board of directors when they move on? My board of directors holds me accountable for success of outcomes and ROI. Health Hats, the podcast, hosted 5 episodes so far in the CEO of Your Health series. I've learned quite a bit from my guests. Let's hear from some of them now. First, we have Jan Oldenburg speaking about whose goals, whose choices, the clinician or the person.
We talk the language of choices and goals, but don't really process the reality. And so, you know, I often find myself saying, you can't dismiss people's health choices as irrational because they're rational to them.
Yeah.
You don't know what context they're making them in. So I might be somebody who prefers non-pharmaceutical options. Actually, I kind of am, right?
Yeah.
And we're kind of okay with that unless it interferes with the treatment we think you should get. Or we tend to frame the person's goals as our goals for them, as opposed to the person's goals for him or herself.
Right. I'm thankful that my diagnosing neurologist, Dr. Kinkel, urged me to consider what was important to me in my life. It fit right in with the lessons I'd been learning from career coaches I follow, Seth Godin and Tim Sullivan. Following their advice, my professional mission is learn on the journey towards best health, to make health choices and decisions, to communicate health information, to support each other, and to learn what works. Measures of success of my personal health operations are the amount and duration of function to maintain my professional and personal life. That means progressing as slowly as possible. The frequency of falls and near falls. That's my personal safety. The hours per week I spend playing the baritone saxophone, and the proportion of the day that I maintain my pathological optimism. Those are proxies for function, mental, and spiritual health. Maintaining my podcasting and advocacy work. Those are my community contributions. And the frequency that I listen to my own advice. Ethics and integrity. Next, let's hear from Barbie Engel, who spoke about the importance of purpose in life as it relates to hope and health.
People need to know that there's hope and help out there. And
hope and help.
Hope and help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And two things that even the smallest glimmer of hope can get you through the worst situation. I guess where I find my hope, and each person would find theirs in a different place. But I've realize what my purpose is in life, and knowing and living and acting towards my purpose increases my hope.
Mm-hmm.
And asking for help is
asking. Is, yeah.
Like you just said, what am I not asking?
Yeah.
It's coming up with the vocabulary to ask for help, which takes practice and patience. Yeah.
We can listen again to Jan Oldenburg, as she told a story about her pulmonologist. She had just shared months' worth of data about her breathing, function, and medications.
And he was just like, oh my God, you actually have data that tells a story. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when people track their data, I just get slips of paper or entries. I don't get it in any form that allows me to understand what story it's telling me. And it's both the patient and the doctor need visualization. They need correlations. They need things that are suggestive of what's going on rather than that it's just data points. And most people don't know what would be useful, and most doctors don't know how to describe what would be useful.
Right now, I think my clinicians get a kick out of my stories and the spreadsheets I keep tracking exercise, weight, and time playing music. We'll need to explore the CIO, Chief Information Officer, role in future episodes. If you recall, we spoke with Jane Bedall, expert in crafting solutions to conflict, and she weighed in on the permanence of decisions.
We can overemphasize how important the decision seems to be. Mm-hmm. Because we overemphasize its permanency. Maybe it's not. Maybe we're going to try this approach for a while.
Yeah.
And certainly in the healthcare world, the fact that this is the response that many, many people have to this treatment doesn't guarantee that's me.
Next, Jane spoke about the nuances of decision making.
And so then it's an opportunity to say, well, let's see how this works on this actual body and human that we're talking about, me. I think it's also very useful to stay away generally in thinking about decision-making from the black and white decisions. There's a lot of room in the middle so often of, well, let's try most of it. Let's try it for now. Let's see if we can modify it a little bit to work better for me. and staying away from the absolutes, the ultimatums, the take it or leave it's.
Yeah.
Those invite trouble. There will sometimes be a conversation about, well, who's in the room who seems to be a decision maker? Well, actually, maybe not everyone who matters is at the table in the room.
Right.
And we need, there are people there who can't make a decision or are going to make a lousy one unless they go speak to someone else. And sometimes it's quite literally shareholders, they have an ownership interest, versus stakeholders. The person who is going to have an important role in the life of the person who's going to make that decision.
Okay.
So it's totally sensible to say. And now the other thing, and I think you hit on this, is it my emergency or is it someone else's emergency? Is it someone else says, oh, I really want to get this decided today. Why are you dragging your feet? Well, because it's my healthcare. It's my life we're talking about here. So that's one of the things that you hit upon.
Okay.
I think you hit on another one, which is things evolve. That's life. Things change, and making decisions that come across as, well, this is it forever. We're done. That decision is made one way or the other. We can never revisit. That's really tough.
I love that Jane broached the subject of the variation and capacity of people making decisions, whether young, old, or ill.
Or you need an advocate, or more than one advocate. We're all different, and there are some of us who really struggle to even think about our own medical decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks need a lot of support. Of course, there are younger people who are moving along that continuum of, I'm an infant, and of course my parents are making decisions for me to, wait a minute, I'm getting a little older, to the point of, why can't I make the decision all on my own? I might say that to my parents. And then at the other end of the age spectrum, maybe my judgment is not as good as it once was. Maybe my eyesight is not as good as it once was. And when someone hands me something to look at to understand this option, I can't see it very well. Or they want to explain it to me in spoken words. My hearing is not that good. Maybe it's never been that good. And that's a really tough way for me to learn.
I have an episode coming up in a couple of weeks with friends struggling to be CEO of their dad's health as his dementia accelerates. My multiple sclerosis is progressing very slowly, but it's progressing. My neurologist prescribed an infusion twice a year that cost $100,000 a dose. Yikes. I asked my neurologist if I needed it. I understood every word he said, but my brain couldn't put all the words together. Thankfully, I had my abridged recording app turned on. I had pushed the big pink button. When I went home, my wife and I listened to the transcription several times. I'm grateful that we could take the time to make an informed decision. Thank you, abridged. Abridged was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridged.com or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your healthcare conversations. Let me know how it went. Let's hear now from Matt Neal, a high school teacher who talked with me about learning to learn and what makes a good learner.
And I do believe that, and again, I'm biased because I'm a teacher, but education is the key here. And by education, I don't just mean knowledge, although knowledge is a part of it. You said something too about it being not knowing that it's an option. And that's how I think a lot of kids and parents approach school, is they think, well, I just kind of show up and exist there, as opposed to being, like you said, being in control. We all know that one of the differences between a good and a great student is a great student's, what are they doing? They're asking questions. They're taking great notes. They're helping other members in the classroom, right? That with their learning as well. They're doing the reading. They're doing the work. And to me, that can apply to healthcare, right? Anytime I've had any health issue that are minor, I'm always amazed by the amount of knowledge I need to know just to, well, how do I manage this? How can I get better? How can I improve? How can I deal with it? And it can be very overwhelming. And I think that's how a lot of kids feel in school. Because the kids are overwhelmed, some of them throw up their hands and they say, well, why bother? Or they just get by. Does that happen in healthcare too? It seems like it would.
Of course it does. That happens in healthcare too. Who's crazy enough to conceive of their health as a business and themselves as CEO? Except me and you, my dear listener. My friend and fellow homeschool parent, Amy Facecorn, spoke about the Zen of leadership. Seize control or seed control?
A lot of what you just said is very spiritual. If you're a reader of the Tao Te Ching, for example, that's the yin and yang of leadership, is knowing when to act and when to observe. In my healthcare, just in recent years, I have finally understood that. And I've also been really clear how I lead my own health, like the CEO. I realize what I can get where and from whom. And I don't try to impose my needs on providers. For a long time, I used to look to Western medical doctors, who are still the core of my treatment when I seek care that doesn't involve self-care practices, right? So I used to go to them for emotional reassurance. I need a metaphorical hug. I switched providers recently. And this new provider, it has zero bedside manner. He's very kind, but that's not his strength. His strength is he's totally up on research. He's totally up on best practice. He just gets the job done. He's very first, do no harm, which in my illness, I really appreciate, because the impulse to intervene pharmaceutically intensely can be there. And he's more of a let's hold off.
Yeah.
So I realize the gifts he gives are the ones I need. And he doesn't need to be my counselor or my psychologist.
Right.
Right. He can just be my Western medical provider, specialist.
Whether you like it, want it, feel prepared, or understand it, let me assure you that you are already the CEO of your health. Some people lack capacity to be their own CEO due to cognitive challenges. Others have formidable barriers due to social circumstances. The role of CEO of their health does not, therefore, go away. It's a whole different set of problems for their social network and medical and neighborhood communities, and it's a topic for another day. As I've said before in blog posts and podcasts, it's a tough system to lead and manage. It's exhausting. I'm a person of privilege and have some of the skills I need. I'm health hats after all. But I have nowhere all the skills I need. There is microscopic training available for health team CEO, at best. Certainly no certificate or degree. The pay stinks. There's no vacation. I can't resign. And almost no one looks at me on my health journey and says, there goes the CEO of his health team. People, if they see me at all, say, there goes the patient. Patient and CEO sound very different. The image of patient is barefoot with their bare butt showing, while a CEO has a suit and bling. If you never consider yourself as CEO of your health, I challenge you to grapple with the idea. Let it sink in for 60 seconds a day. More than that is freaky and overwhelming. Start with figuring out what your company is here to do, your purpose in life. Then build a team to help you do it. You can't be CEO alone, no matter how healthy, privileged, or lucky you think you are. If you're one of the glorious few who are already fair CEOs of your health, get better at it. And reach out to any three people close to you or near you. Near, like spend time in the same block, and then help them become CEO of their health. Your lives depend on it. I'm on a mission to learn about learning to be CEO of your health. If you have ideas or experience, let me know. Let's learn together. See the show notes, previous podcasts, and other resources on my website, health-hats.com/pod. Please subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. See you around the block.